Hi, and welcome to the Unslumped podcast. I am your host, Jennifer Beckham, and I am joined today, again, by my son, Cole Beckham.
Howdy, howdy.
So we today are going to be in the very deep parts and places of the pit of grief. If you know anything about Cole, myself and our family, I lost my husband, who was Cole's dad. We lost the hero of our life.
Yeah.
He was our Superman. He died of COVID 19 days after he was admitted to the hospital. He died completely 100% alone without anybody because the hospitals were on lockdown. We thought he was going to be coming out and going to be joining us again with life, and he never made it out. And all of us went through COVID. All of us went through just the most tragic, painful time during COVID, and we're all on this side of it. And so now what we're doing is we're trying to recover, we're trying to rebuild, we're trying to reconnect. So we're going to be talking about grief because we are very well acquainted with it.
Very well.
But thankfully, the Bible says that Jesus was well acquainted with our grief as well, right? That he left the splendors of heaven to come down to this earth, to walk on this earth and to endure the things that we endure. The Bible calls him the man of sorrows, and he understood suffering. And so we're not going to be afraid of the emotion of grief and pain and suffering, right?
No, not at all.
We're not afraid of it. Cole and I like to get into the dirty and dark places because that's where I believe that the light of God shines the brightest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree.
And so we're going to talk to Cole a little bit today because I'm his mom. And I know that a lot of you have written in to say, you know, how do I help my child through grief, the grief of a breakup, the pain of a lost dream, of being stuck or in a slump in their life where, you know, they came back to my home during COVID and they haven't been able to get out.
Yeah.
They haven't been able to restart their life. They're in pain. Yeah. Your generation has been hit by a lot of things that we are not familiar with. And so not only are you guys having to endure things that we never had to, but we, as your parents and as your guardians and as your friends, are having to endure them with you. Mm-hmm. And that is a type of suffering.
Yeah.
There's the suffering of going through it, and there's the suffering of watching your loved one go through it.
Yeah.
Cole, let's go through a little bit of what you walk through. First of all, you see my son has a ton of tattoos, but he has a tattoo on his stomach. And what does it say?
It's okay to not be okay.
That's right.
Yep.
It's okay to not be okay. And that's what we want to talk about today, because I think that the subject of grief is something that in the world that we live in, that we think that grief is something that is supposed to be cured and fixed. Mm-hmm. And,
not at all.
And because we live in a world where everything's about mastery and fixing things, we need to recognize that grief is not mastery, but rather a mystery that we don't understand. So the only thing you can do instead of fixing it and mastering it is to embrace it and to be in it and to be as healthy as you can be in it.
Absolutely.
Cole, talk about some of the things that you walked through during a season of really a season of darkness. I mean, yours was probably 2 and 3 and maybe even 4 years long.
Yeah.
Where you just kept getting pummeled by life. Talk to me about that.
So pretty much in high school, my dream was to play pretty much since the age of 8. I wanted to play in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Getting no offers all the way until senior year. Going into college, dealing with loss of a purpose. Who am I? What am I even doing? Am I even good enough? Dealing with stress and anxiety and suicidal thoughts being around quite often. On the tail end of college, completely losing football altogether. So I lost my dream. I lost my purpose, my passion. Also lost my person who I thought was at the time my person, a 4-year relationship that ended. Then pretty much moving back home, I think was the hardest part because I thought when I left home, I would leave home for good. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought this is my time. I'll spread my wings. I'll fly.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like my life came crashing down. I lost my dad. That's when the depression and the anxiety and everything really settled in. It really kind of made its place, and it was a felt like a dark cloud hovering mm-hmm. around me 24/7 everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. So pretty much I lost, it felt like everything in my entire life in the span of, like you said, 3 or 4 years.
3 years, yeah.
You know, it felt like everything came crashing down.
Mm-hmm. And you're already, you already have a temperament of being a very feeling child.
I'm a melancholic choleric.
Right. Yeah. If you don't know what that is, we'll be covering that on the podcast as well. Yeah. So that we can understand our temperament and what each other needs and all of that good stuff. It's something that we did at the church. An amazing study that really helped you to understand yourself and each other.
Yeah.
But Cole knows exactly who he is now. But in all honesty, you can say that you're a melancholy choleric and that's great.
Yeah.
Except, and our viewers may not understand it, but there was a time you didn't understand that either.
I didn't understand anything that I was feeling.
Yeah. You just knew that you were a very deep feeling child.
Yes. Who
all of your life
who cried a lot, who took everything to heart, who wore their feelings on their sleeve.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to deal with it. I love my daddy to death, but he said that every time I told him, like, Daddy, I feel sad. He's like, what do you freaking pissy have to be sad about, boy? I was thinking, I don't know. Today I feel like I want to cry. I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have anybody to kind of validate what I was feeling. Cause that also made me never want to open up to anybody.
Right.
Cause I was like, am I weird? What's wrong with me?
Right. Right. Yeah. And so we know now, and he knows now, and thankfully I'm very much like Cole in that, I believe that my giftings to, I'm an empath, right? So I believe that's part of a gifting that God's given me to be able to feel deeply. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, the world requires people like us who are empaths that can stand next to somebody and feel what they're feeling to be able to go there with them. Not everybody's that way. My husband and his sister were not that way.
Not even close.
They always thought that we were just Debbie Downers and just kind of like that we just needed to just, you know, what would Daddy always say? That boy, just make a choice to be happy and be happy.
Yeah, happiness is a choice. No, it's not.
And so happiness is a choice in that we have to choose properly how to deal with the emotions that come. And then that's how we choose happiness is I'm choosing happiness by understanding what I'm feeling and knowing how to deal with it. And so we're going to talk about that today on this podcast because we have to understand what do we do with the things that come up. Emotions, feelings, all those things, they are real. They are alive.
Yeah. They are meant to be felt.
And they are alive. Yeah. And
Inside Out.
Yeah.
Literally. Go watch Inside Out.
Yeah. And so the thing is that we would probably be, if we're talking about Inside Out, the movie, we would probably be...
That would be sadness.
We would be sad. Sadness. Yeah. But sometimes happy, too, right? Like, we're all in, but we feel things deeply. And so for Cole, he had walked through all of those really painful places.
Yeah.
And I know that as a mom, I'm so grateful that I understood what that roller coaster that you were going through. And it was also a constant fight with his dad because he didn't understand and he always wanted to come by and rush you through your grief process.
Absolutely.
And get you to the place. And so there's a nice balance that we have to find. You want to yawn? Are you okay?
Yeah.
And there's a balance that we have to find because we don't want to camp out in our pain. But at the same time, we can't rush it. So what does that look like? When we're talking about grief and loss, it's not just about burying someone. Sometimes it's about burying a dream. Sometimes it's burying a hope that was so alive and now that hope is no longer, right? So we have to recognize that there are at least, Cole, 28 major transitions that we go through in our life.
Yeah.
And they're not always bad transitions. It could be a transition into becoming a mother or a transition into, leaving the house and becoming an adult. That's supposed to be a very positive transition.
Finding a new career path.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And so sometimes those are very positive transitions, but they also can end up being very difficult transitions.
Absolutely.
Right? One of the books that I've been going through is a book called It's Okay That You're Not Okay, similar to your stomach. And it's just to let you know, it's probably one of the greatest books that I've read on grief and how we need to change the culture of grief. And it is written by Megan Devine. So if you're looking for a great book on how do I deal with the grief that I'm feeling, or how do I deal with the grief that somebody else is going through that I want to support and love properly, that's a great resource. But in that, let's talk about how do we support you through a breakup. How do we support you through the loss of a dream? How do we support you through those things? Because I know that as a mom, I want to run into the room and I want to take away your pain, but I can't.
Yeah.
And you're going to know that one day when you're a parent, how hard that is to watch your kids go through the biggest slump.
I feel that in a lot of ways as a husband, though, too.
Do you? Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, Cole just got married a year and 4 months ago.
Year and 4 months ago, March 4th, 2023. So that was the best day of my life. So pretty much that's exactly how I feel. Because I know when Gavin goes through something, yes, that's my wife's name. She has a boy's name. It's hot. Leave it alone.
names for girls are hot.
When she goes through something and I see that she's going through a lot of pain, the number one thing I wish I could do is like, can I hold that for you? Can I take that from you? Is that possible? Mm. But it's not. It sucks. But the number one thing that I also learned, I think, and this will help a lot of parents too, is I am a fixer. And I have to stop trying to fix her pain. And she tells me that a lot of times. I catch myself in that, where I need to stop telling her how she needs to think, what she needs to do, action she needs to take. She's like, I just want you to sit here and just listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of times what I feel like a lot of kids need is, I mean, you understand the picture of a teenager is like, oh, I hate my life, my parents don't understand me, slamming doors, all that. But that middle part right there is my parents don't understand me.
Yeah.
That all a lot of times that is very true, because you don't know unless you know. Like, you have to listen and hear the kid out, listen what they're saying, you know, because you can't figure everything out, but you have to just be there for them so you can understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty much like how Jesus is with us. And mm-hmm. I say this all the time. It's a Lecrae line, is if God's real, I believe he became a man. Otherwise, there's no way to understand what it's like to be me, what it's like to be an outcast tempted by all the devil's diseases.
Mm.
So it's that thing where you, in order to know what it is, you have to walk through it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of parents, like how you were saying now,
mm-hmm.
kids are dealing with a lot more stuff than the older generations had to deal with. But we're also getting the most crap, I feel like my generation is. In a lot of ways, how we deal with things, why we're turning out the way we're turning. But unless you've been through it, you're not able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So I want to stop there and say something that you just said, that your generation, I'm going to break this down, that your generation has had it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone listening that is in my generation, what rises up inside of us is a retort of, we had it hard in our generation.
Yeah.
And hold, and here's, this is exactly the point, right? Let the response and the retort go away.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. What he's trying to get is a validation of what they've been through is hard. And the reason why we want to jump back and say, yeah, but what we walk through is hard too, is because we want validation.
Absolutely.
So everybody does. So this is exactly what we'll take from that statement. Let's forget about the fact that this generation thinks they've been through the hardest and we think we've been through the hardest. And my mom will tell us, you know, walking in the snow uphill was the hardest, right? Like all of that stuff we all think. But the reason why we go there and we are willing to like dig our heels in and say, no, I had it harder, is because our natural human desire is to be seen, to be heard, to be validated.
Absolutely.
And that is all that we are looking for. And that's where your statement comes in. So the first thing that we need to recognize is that that grief is not a problem to be solved, but what we do need to do is the real work of grief is this. It's learning how to be in someone's grief with them. Mm-hmm. In other words, Cole, I validate your grief. I validate the fact that you think that what you're walking through is the hardest thing on the planet and nobody else has had to walk through it that way.
Yeah.
Who cares that I don't agree with that and that I don't need to say to him, well, there'll be worse things. Because I'm sorry, there's nothing, I don't want to hear that right now in this moment, right? So we need to learn to be in the grief with somebody and we need to bear witness to it, meaning that I hear you, I see you, I validate that. And then to encourage you not to turn away from your pain and to not rush you through your pain, to just be in it with you and let the process be exactly that, a process. There's something that happened to you during the darkest times of your life is you found somebody to bear witness to your pain. When yes,
999. That's how I
Juice World. I know you're going who? Juice World. Who's Juice hardcore. World?
Juice World is he passed away sadly of a drug overdose. He was a hip-hop artist. He was a rapper, to this day, greatest freestyler of all time. But he...
not Christian, either.
Not Christian by any means, but no. He validated my feelings. He dealt with a lot of things that I dealt with. I struggled with depression and anxiety from the age of 11, but suicidal thoughts didn't come till I was 15 years old. I found Juice WRLD. And he validated a lot of my feelings and emotions of feeling completely alone in this world. Honestly, a lot of his songs, he talked about it. So he freestyled every song, which it's off the top of your head. A lot of times he talked about just taking himself out. And that's how I was like, dang, I'm not the only one who feels that way. Like, I feel like there's a dark cloud hovering around me 24/7. I feel like I'm just fighting demons 24/7, trying to be happy. And I feel detached. I feel none of this is actually real. We're all in a dream. And I'm like, it validated my feelings in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I messed around and I got his name tattooed on my leg and everything. And I mean, it speaks a story now. I mean, if I were to get a Juice WRLD tattoo now, would I? No. But in that moment, I was like, I need this dude in my life, you know, and it was all I would listen to.
And here's the thing, as I know that we're kind of all over the place, this is a huge topic, right? But what we're trying to get to is how do we come alongside one another and assist them through their grief journey without rushing them through it, without trying to be logical through it, because there is just no logic that can be put with the emotions that come out of us, right?
No.
And no one's going to understand it unless they're walking through it. And even when they walk through it, they're going to experience it different. But the reason why I want to talk about the Christian aspect of it is this. His dad was very, very strict on the things that we listened to, the things that we watched at home. We weren't allowed rated R movies. He despised.
He would always say, it is rated R for a reason.
Reason. Okay. Reason. And,
reason.
And there, and he hated secular music. And so when Cole found himself through these dark spaces and places, he went to Juice WRLD. And Juice WRLD was not a good influence. I mean, he was clearly on drugs. He was clearly, not preaching the gospel through his messages and his songs. And here's the thing. His dad was so adamantly against that. But at the same time, it's where Cole found his safe space.
I found validation.
He found validation. He found the me too. The two greatest words ever in the English language are me too. And that is because it's you are not alone. It's okay to not be okay. I will sit here with you in this. And that's what Juice WRLD did for you, even though it was just through song.
Absolutely.
So if you happen to be a parent who is, watching your kid go to a place that is not Christian-like, and, you know, there's nothing good in that. There's a reason they're drawn to it. And so sometimes just digging in your heels and saying, you are not going to listen to that stuff is not helpful, because it's where they're finding a safe place. So the best thing that you can do is become a safe place for them.
Yeah. I also believe that I don't ever want to box God in. God has the power to speak to you through anything.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean,
well said, son.
You know, like, stop trying to put God in a box. I mean, I was just watching something the other day. God was completely in Moana, and he was also in Inside Out 2 in a scene where Joy was casting anxiety out of Riley. And it's like, don't box God in. I believe God sent me or sent my vision to Juice World in the way that I needed validation that I wasn't getting anywhere else. So that one day I was in an airport and this guy was behind me in line and he was like, "Hey man, I love your tattoo."
Of Juice World.
Of Juice World. And he said, "But I want to tell you about this guy who actually helped me get through my stuff, and his name is Jesus." And I was like, "Brother, I know the guy you're talking about." But dang, you know what? You're right. And I was like, maybe I got validation, but I'm not supposed to stay here. I'm supposed mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. pick what I learned mm-hmm. and take it and move on. Another thing, I'm learning about Samson right now because I have an event this weekend. And I was literally looking at the story of Samson mm-hmm. and how he was a Nazirite and he was supposed to get back to the Philistines. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he did was he fell in love or liked this Philistine woman and wanted to marry her. Mm-hmm. And his parents were like, no. Like, are you sure there's no one else in the tribe that you can marry instead? He's like, I want her. She looks good to me. Little did I know or anybody else know that God was doing that on purpose as a kind of inside route to get back at a lot of the Philistines. So pretty much God's like, you know what? I'm going to bring you a complete different direction than not everybody sees, especially your parents. But you're going to pick up what you learn here, and then you're going to use it for my glory. You know, Romans 8:28, he works everything out for our good. So it's...
Cole, I'm completely with you because here's the thing. And we weren't going in this direction, so just receive it if you need to,
yeah.
If this is for you. And it's not always the case, but this was the case for me. When your dad met me, I was a heathen. He was called to preach the gospel. He was an evangelist. He was, well, just starting out in evangelism. He desired to be an evangelist full time, but he was only ministering part time. When he met me, I was not in church.
Yeah.
I was not seeking God. He said that the first time that he met me, I met him through a multi-level marketing company. Okay. I was trying to recruit him into the company. And when he met me, first thing he said is the minute that I walked out of my vehicle that he saw me and said, "I want her. That is my wife." Right. He didn't even bother to find out whether or not I was a Christian and where I stood in my faith. He just knew, as he says, he just knew I was hot. That's what he said. Okay. He just said, "She looked good and I want her." And he was a preacher and totally called of God. Right. So he was should have been looking for a virtuous woman. I was not. And the fact is that doesn't pan out on paper. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
But I ended up being the best thing for his ministry. And, right. And I ended up being hungry for God. I ended up being hungry for the word. Yeah. And he ended up helping me grow exponentially in my faith, introducing me back to Jesus, because I had already been saved, but I was not serving him.
Right.
And the thing is that he ended up being exactly what I needed, and I ended up being what he needed. But on paper,
it doesn't work.
It didn't work. And so you're exactly right. I mean, we put God in a box, but God has a plan that we don't always understand.
Yeah.
And I think that is a message that we need to receive in grief too, and when we're grieving and mourning, is that we try to understand. Mm-hmm. We try to fix it. We try to understand it. We try to master this emotion.
A lot of us need to understand that crooked sticks draw straight lines. Like that God can turn your complete mess into again, like everybody says, his perfect masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. So help us understand, because, you know, you're talking a lot about faith now. You're talking a lot about, you know, scripture comes out of your mouth super easily. Thank you, VeggieTales. But the thing is...
it wasn't always like that.
It wasn't always like that. Talk about your faith and how it's helped you during the hardest moments of your grief. Were you always, like, when you lost Daddy... When you lost your girlfriend, when you lost your dream of playing football, when COVID hit and basically completely turned your life upside down, like many, many, many of us out here today, how has your faith helped during the hardest moments of your life during grief? And where was your faith in those moments?
Non-existent, to answer that question off the bat.
Even as a preacher's kid?
Even as a preacher's kid, if you know anything about preacher's kids, pastor's kids always have a million eyes on them. They're held under a magnifying glass, and as soon as they get a hint of freedom, they can take off running. And that's exactly what I did.
And your faith, just because you're sitting underneath a faith, you're sitting underneath the faith of your parents.
Yeah, it wasn't my faith.
Yeah,
was,
so you're riding off our coattails.
Your coattails. It mm-hmm. was more, I know Jesus, but I don't know Jesus. Like, right, that's how it right, was. Right. I knew all the Bible stories. I could tell you everything about it. But did I believe them? As much as I heard. You know, mm-hmm. now, I didn't believe him in the way that I didn't know who Jesus was. I always thought of Jesus as a dictator in the sky, not a loving father who comes alongside his children.
He wasn't a friend to you.
He wasn't a friend. I felt like every time I screwed up, you throw up his hands and be like, what is he doing? Oh, I'm like, again? I thought you promised me you wouldn't do that again. And that's mm-hmm. like, I'm like, I didn't understand that kind of aspect.
You always felt like a failure.
I always felt like a failure mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, losing everything, mm-hmm. that's when my faith went with it. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't believe that losing my girlfriend at the time was the best thing because I thought that I was supposed to marry her. I didn't believe that losing football was the best thing at the time because I thought that's what I was supposed to do with my life. I thought that's what I was put on this earth to do. Mm-hmm. I think my dad was the final, I think it was the straw that broke the camel's back mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. As soon as he died, me and God, we weren't tight in the beginning at all. Like, we were not friends whatsoever. Like,
were you praying to God that God would heal him?
I was, but I didn't know if I actually believed that he could.
Or that he would.
Or that he could or he would. And when he passed away, me and God, I just shut God out completely. I was so pissed. And if that word offends you, offenses are chosen. Take it how you want it. But I was so pissed off because I'm thinking, who are you to take him from me? Because I still had to, at the time, I still had to get married. I still had to have kids. I still had to figure out what I was, first of all, just going to do with my life, you know. I was so mad, and I didn't know how to take it, so I was pissed. I literally said, I hate you. I don't know what you're doing here, but I clearly, you don't know what you're doing. And
that's so offensive to people to hear right now.
Yeah.
Because it's like you don't have a reverence for God.
Yeah. If you have ever, if you have never been through something like that, then you really can't justify anything, how to feel.
And though there are some who do go through some heinous, horrible things and who just for some possible way, they don't ever go there, Cole. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There is no way to understand.
Stronger than me?
There is. Okay, but that, yeah. But does that actually mean, I don't know. I don't know. We're gonna have to get into that because your dad never went to those deep, dark places. Mm-hmm. But I also know that there were some deep, dark places in him that he never let God touch. So yeah. Does that actually mean that he is, quote, stronger in his faith? Or does that mean that we just find places to put things?
Yeah.
And
it's like an F's mansion.
Yeah.
You have houses that you don't let anybody in.
Right. Right. Yeah. So for you, you just have the ability to be able to say that honestly. Like, this is honestly. And a lot of people don't feel okay saying those words that I was mad at God. But can I assure you something? And the reason I'm interrupting you is because somebody needs to hear that it's okay to have emotions. It is not okay for emotions to have you. Mm-hmm. And the only way to have emotions not have and own you is to admit that they're there.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you can say that honestly and say, I was mad at God. I said to God, who are you? Let's be honest. Who is God? God is, you don't have a daddy if it wasn't for God, right? So you don't have anything if it wasn't for God. So that's who God is. It's like, who are you to take away my daddy? Well, I'm the one that gave you your daddy. So there's, answers for all these things, right? But it's just what you were feeling and what you were thinking at the time. And you're just bold enough right now to talk about it. So where did you go from there, from that feeling?
From there, I remember I turned inside myself. I'm usually the person that expresses emotions outward. I expressed emotions inward. I didn't speak to anybody. I didn't speak for 3 days. I didn't move off the couch. I kept trying to sleep because I thought that I would wake up and it all would be a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was what I was trying to escape from. Mm-hmm. So I slept. I remember I took a nap and I went to sleep that night. And I had a dream, and it was so real. Mm-hmm. I had a dream that I showed up in heaven, and I was standing there, and I saw my dad and Jesus sitting on the throne talking together as friends. And I woke up in just pure tears. I was like, I literally repented. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry if I offended you. I'm so sorry I turned my back on you. I'm so sorry.
You said that to God?
I was just pouring my heart out. Just pretty much talking to him like a friend.
Yeah.
And I believe that God communicates through dreams. We've seen him so many times in the Bible wake kings up in the middle of their sleep, like literally just talk through dreams and talk to people. So where I slept on the couch was it was this little love seat, and then it was dad's chair. Everybody knows you don't sit in daddy's chair, all right? That's for any family. When daddy comes downstairs, you get up and move out of his chair. So my head was to his seat, to his chair. And I remember I had a dream, but in my dream I woke up. And I saw my dad just sitting there looking at me. And it felt so real because I woke up and I cried. And I felt his hug in my sleep. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard his voice so clear. And I was telling him everything. I'm like, Dad, oh, my God, I had this horrible dream. I had a dream you passed away. Everything happened. And he looked at me and said, Bubba, I'm sorry, but that actually happened. And I said, what do you mean? Like, how can this happen? What am I going to do? And he said, everything's going to be okay. And we just talked for a few minutes. And then right at the end of my dream before I woke up, he looked at me and said, I love you. I have to go, but I promise I'll see you soon. And then I woke up and I was like, I needed that so much because I never got to say goodbye, but I finally got to say goodbye this time. Mm. So where I went with my faith was from that moment, from my daddy's death, I have never believed more or had such a good faith because I realized that God isn't a dictator in the sky. He's not some person that will throw his hands up at you and is mad at you. That he is a genuine father. He is a genuine friend. He will come beside you. He'll get in the pit with you. You know, he will celebrate your highs and he will be with you at your lows. You know, he is that person that you can have an honest conversation with. You know, I talk to God like, I don't know what's going on. I'm stressed out and I need your help right now. And I give it to you. I give you full control. I don't know what's going on, but I need you to show up. Please just show your hand in this. And I express when I'm mad. I express when I'm sad. I express when I'm happy. I give him thanks. I give him glory, but I also give him my pain.
Mm.
You know, I give him all of me.
There were times through high school where you were closer to God.
You would always say, I love when you get saved again. And that always, it always stuck with me. I'm like, what do you mean again? Like, and I would get really close to God.
Mm-hmm.
I would find a pastor that I liked. I would find pretty much getting deeper in church. And I'm like, I'm taking notes at service now. I'm actually asking my mom and dad questions. I'm like, what does this mean? And I would start listening to Christian music again. And I would be on fire for God, especially when we went to youth camp. Mm-hmm. I would be on fire for God.
Mm-hmm.
and it would be gone in a few weeks. And I would be right back in that place of not knowing who he was again. It's like I forgot all the information I just learned. It's like it was crazy. And it's honestly what I realized was I pushed God out because I let other things come in. You know, you can't serve two masters. You know, your cup can only be so full. Mm-hmm. And if I keep filling it with all this other stuff, I'm pushing God out completely. So, there was a bunch of times in high school I was all in, and then I was all out.
You know, you said a moment ago that I used to say to you that I love when you get saved again. And yeah. I want to clarify that because we don't get saved multiple times in our lives. That's not what we mean. No, what I would mean, just so that if you want to hit the comment section with a bunch of scripture about salvation, what I would mean by that is I love when you're leaning in again.
Yeah.
Because a relationship with Christ and the growing of your faith, it's a journey.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it is a relationship. And so it's the same thing as a relationship with anyone. You're going to have times where you are super connected to one another, other times where you're just kind of existing, other times where you're really interested and you're learning new things about one another, and then other times where you're kind of just passing in the hallway. You know what I mean?
And relationships need work.
And
they're not easy.
Right. They need constant care and attention, and it's an investment of time and effort and energy. And so what I would mean by that is there were times that it was so obvious that you were leaned in. There I go through the same thing right now. It's like I have to be cognizant of, am I leaning into God?
I do that too.
Right?
All the time.
And it's so we have to recognize that, you know, and we're going to talk about it on the podcast because it's one of the best teachings that I've understood is a thing called The Critical Journey. It's a book, and it's an older book, but it is right spot on in that our journey of faith is exactly that. It's a journey of faith.
Journey. Yeah.
And there are times that we are all in, and what would Daddy say? If you're not all in, you ain't in at all. And there were times, he was a cliche king, but there are times that we are all in and investing and trying and like, and just journeying with God and learning things. And then there are times that we're just existing.
Yes.
And those times where you were just existing, you were so different. I am so different. And then there were times when you were leaned in and you can see clearly what God was doing in your life and you were in the Word and you were seeking God and you were listening to Christian music, which was like bringing you closer to Him because you were in an attitude of worship a lot. You were just a different human being.
I was. And that's
we all are.
I realize now, when I feel myself kind of leaning out, kind of pulling out a little bit, I notice that my habits change, my language changes, and my listening habits change. I realize that I turn on some of those songs I used to listen to and everything, and I'm like, no. My ears are connected to my heart. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's how I was wired, where what I listen to, if it doesn't feed my spirit, mm-hmm. it's starving me, and I'll look for something else, mm-hmm. you know.
So, what you feed will grow. What you starve will die.
Die. I mm-hmm. love that one because mm-hmm. I loved that was one of my favorite quotes Dad said. Mm-hmm. But you came from you.
Yeah.
Of course you did. But no,
Daddy knew verses. I knew the application.
Yeah.
He was the Bible. I was the footnotes.
So I noticed I start cussing again, honestly. Like I my dog pisses me off and I will let a few words fly, you know, or I drop something and a word falls out of my mouth. And it's honestly, it's the further I get away, cause he never moves. We always do. We're either moving close or we're moving further away. We never just stand still. And I notice those things start coming out in me and I'm mm-hmm. like, I need to dial back in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like you're losing your gain. It's like you're working out. You're losing the gains that you just tried so hard to make.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. you're not, you can never just stay the same strength. You could either get stronger or you could get weaker.
Right.
You know.
So let's go back to, cause you're so full of the Word and so full of a whole lot of years of, you know, listening and hearing the Word. And that's good, because faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. And so let's go back to, what are some of the ways that we support our loved ones properly and not well, both of them, during times of grief and pain? I remember, you know, when you were going through your breakup, and it was a 4-year relationship, and it was like, it was not only just losing your love, but it was also burying the dream of what was to be in your mind. I know that for me, that when I lost Daddy, it wasn't just that I lost my husband, my best friend, you know, he was my pastor as well.
Yeah.
You know, we did everything together, but I was also having to bury all of the dreams that I had, that we had with each other, for one another going forward.
Right.
And so there's so much that goes into that. So watching you go through the loss of your loved one who you thought would be with you forever.
And then also,
right. And God knows exactly what he's doing. But at the time though, there is no convincing you of that.
No, not at all.
And we go into our kids' rooms and we try to convince them that this is good and this is better this way and you're going to find someone else.
There's plenty
of people out there, and God's got something better for you. And all of those things are ways that we try to fix this problem for you and try to master this grief. Grief is not to be mastered. We just have to go in there and sit with you in your pain and trust God.
I think the perfect example of what you should do was, it happened for my first ever breakup. I was 15. And it was that same girl. I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I got broken up with over text in the car. And we were in the car at church. And I'll never forget, it was Dad and Andy DeLeon. They were in the front seat. And I was bawling my eyes out. And they looked at me and said, she broke up with you, didn't she? I said, she did. I said, okay. So I went home. And I was crying in my room. And my dad opened the door, and there was a bunch of the men from the men's group at church. And they said, come on, let's go out back. Let's sit by the pool. You're going to have a beer with the boys. Of course, it wasn't actual beer. It was root beer. It was root beer because, again, I was 15 and they didn't drink. It was root beer, and they brought my dad a Dr. Pepper because he thought root beer was gross. And we all sat around drinking the Dr. Pepper. Just the boys in the back. And they shared in my pain with me. They told stories about their first breakups, but they also gave me encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And their wife, I would never have met her if it wasn't for a breakup, you know. And they were encouraging me in the way that it wasn't in your face, but it was also feeling in my pain because they've been through the same thing, you know. And they also validated my feelings a lot and showed me and told me ways how to get through it. You know, cry when you need to cry, punch what you need to punch, burn whatever stuff you need to burn that was like pictures or whatever. And I did. I burned pictures. I cried. I just pretty much kept my mind occupied, you know.
But it wasn't what they said as much as the fact that they were just there in it with you.
They were there with me.
Yeah.
The fact that they dropped whatever they were doing that night, left their families to come over and be with some 15-year-old kid who just got his heart broken. Like, that was the thing that meant the absolute most to me.
I remember two of the guys came in and they jumped on the bed with you.
They jumped on top of him.
On top of him.
Yeah.
Just to get him to smile. Yeah. And, you know, you can't do that with every kid, but like, they knew him well enough to know. And so they jumped on him and said, get up, boy. We're going outside. You're going to have a beer with the boys. And it was just such a sweet thing because it was root beer. But it was sitting by the pool and it was just a bunch of dudes talking about relationships and life and, the hard things.
And that honestly showed me that men also have like a really good soft spot too.
Yeah.
Men are supposed to be this big, burly protector and everything else like that, but they don't understand that we're also people, you know, and that sometimes the best person to get through to a guy is another guy. you know, it's that sharing
say,
in that emotion.
Say that, because the rate, the suicide rate for men is astronomical. Men it's will say,
so
the men will say that they don't have anyone to go to. And when they do go, that they're perceived as weak and that it actually hurts their cause, then helps it.
I feel like your friends, the ones who you have been through a lot with, but mostly if you're a guy, your guy friends, dude, I never fail to tell my buddies how much I love them, how mm-hmm. much we all joke around. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you got to offer that comfort in the way like, hey, if you ever need me, and I mean this 100%, if you ever need me, please call me or text me or let me know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we can goof off and we could be funny with each other and we could wrestle and do all this roughhouse mm-hmm. and just play. But it's mm-hmm. also that, dog, if you need me, I got you. Like, it's those friends that would literally mm-hmm. bail you out of jail, or, you know what, go to jail with you. You know, it's those friends. And honestly, a lot of times why men feel that way is because when we try to express our feelings and emotions, the way they look at us and the way they respond, I feel like we need to do better to stop holding an expectation on each other, to mm-hmm. stop having these social constructs of this is how you need to be, this is what you're supposed to be. I mean, Gavin completely broke that for me. It's been many times where I'm the breadwinner and she's the breadwinner, and it's amazing. Praise God, it's all in the same pot. So pretty much we both win.
That's what your daddy used to say.
But I beat myself up so much because when I look in the mirror, I see my own worst critic.
Yeah.
And no one on this earth is harder than I am on myself.
No.
You know.
All of us, all honestly.
That's what I'm saying. No one is harder on me than myself.
Yeah. We all.
And she sat me down and said, you need to stop getting in your head so much, because you have to understand that even though you're not providing the most right now, you're still doing every other thing. You're protecting me. You're being my comfort. You're being my safe place. You're being my best friend. Mm-hmm. She's like, you don't need to hold all that weight. Give me something to hold. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, that's good.
So good.
I feel like that's what we need in people, that we as guys need to come together, have each other's backs, mm-hmm. okay, and just let each other be, you know. And that's girls too. Like, go to other girls, completely open up. Don't backstab, just be there for them and be their safe place and comfort. Because a lot of people don't have that.
And parents, let your kids be.
Yes.
Where they are.
Stop trying to pretty much control their life in a lot of ways that you hold so much pressure that they have to go into the family business. They have to be a doctor. They have to be a lawyer. They have to go to college to get a good job. College is not even guaranteed. A lot of stuff isn't guaranteed in this lifetime, but what should be guaranteed is the love and support from your friends and your family. That should be the one thing that is guaranteed in this lifetime, that you will never walk alone.
I think that, you know, as parents, we try to fix our kids. We try to fix one another, no matter what stage of life you're in, because it's hard on us to watch you hurt. Mm-hmm. And so we need you to be fixed so that it can fix me, because this is really, really hard.
Stop hurting it.
And yes, absolutely. And, you know, I just got back from a funeral. A friend that has been helping us with the podcast and the back office stuff here, Shanika, we were putting together the podcast room and equipment and getting it all set up. And she received a phone call, and her dad had died. And she literally fell to her face and stayed there for over an hour without moving, just bawling her eyes out. And all I could do was sit there with her in that. Thankfully, I knew that I didn't have to have words, because there's nothing I can say in this moment to make this better. There's nothing that I can do to make this better. And part of why we want to press somebody through their pain is because we're in pain sitting there with them in it. And it's hard, but we have to. It's the only place. It's the only... It's what grief is. It's just, it's an extension of love. What did Andrew Garfield say?
Andrew Garfield, a.k.a. the best Spider-Man, said that grief is just all the unexpressed love that wasn't shared.
Absolutely. And so it's like the reason why we grieve so hard is because we loved so hard. And so there's nothing we can do to get through that. And here's the saddest part. Shanika lost her dad. You know, it's been just over 2 months. Like, it's 2 months, 3 days right now. And just the other day she was here, and on her 2 month anniversary of her dad's death, she received a text from a friend, and that text was, "You're not yourself. When do we get the old Shanika back? When do we get our old friend back? You've been different." It is 2 months.
Duh.
It is 2 months from when she has gone through, and that wasn't her only punch in the gut.
No.
Just 6 months before that, she lost the dad that raised her, her stepdad. And then, a couple months before that, she lost a best friend. So she, like you, had one after another of hard things that hit her.
Yeah.
And then the audacity of someone to text her and say, "Hey, you're not the same at work. When are we going to get the old you back?" And then when she didn't respond quick enough to that text, the response after that was, "Oh, sorry, take your time responding to me." And it's like, what? The sarcasm in that was insane. And it was so sad because that's what we're expecting of one another, right? Yeah. It's like, aren't you supposed to be over this by now? You know, it's 3 years into this, Cole. Like, you're about to hit your 3-year mark of losing your dad. Why are you still not okay?
And it still hits me in random times. Like, there are songs that I cannot listen to.
Yeah.
There is, even though I'm leaving, Luke Combs, 5 More Minutes by Scotty McCreery, Visiting Hours by Ed Sheeran, I cannot listen to those songs.
Yeah.
And, or Watching You by that other country artist. And it tore me to pieces. There are times that I see my wife, Gavin, she is my father all over, and things that she does and things she says, it's hilarious. And thank God, by the grace of God, doesn't look like him. That'd be weird. But
she does look like your sister.
No, she does not. No, she does not. That's weird.
But it's not. It looks like she's part of our family. I love it.
Part of our family, not
it's
my
good.
Sibling.
It's but good. No.
It's, she is a
beautiful
mixture of the person I love the most and the person I miss more than anything.
Wow.
So things that she does, I'm like, my God, you are my father. I'm like, or she says something, I'm like, I'm Anthony Jr. Like, it's stuff like that. And I'm like, and it's so refreshing, but it also sometimes just tears me to pieces.
Yeah.
And I just freaking fall and I cry in her arms, and she hugs me and holds me. And she always asks this thing, and I love it so much. Instead of trying to fix me or tell me what I need, she asks me, "What can I do? Is there anything that you need?"
Wow.
And I'm like, perfect response. That's all I need right there, was the fact that you even care enough to ask.
Yeah.
And the answer is, I'm okay. I just needed a hug. And that's it. And she doesn't try to pry. No, seriously, what do you need? How can I help you? She's like, okay. That's it.
If this is where you are today,
I'll be
then I'll just
you.
Be there with you in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the answer for death, loss, whatever type of pain someone is going through. It's, I love you and care about you enough to be here with you in it, to not rush you through it, to not try to find answers for you. And so some of you are saying, you know, somebody texted in the other day and said, how do you know when to help somebody out of their hole and when to get into the hole with them? And that is such a great question, because it is true that the name of this podcast is Unslumped. And that is because we get slumped in life and we stay too long sometimes in our pain.
Yeah.
So how do you know when to help somebody along or when to get in that pit with them?
I think you need to be in the pit with them the entire time. I think that's the thing for me, is I want you to be in there the entire time with me.
And that way I know you well enough to know whether or not you're stuck or
you're trying to get out.
Right.
So, but also, like, I look at it as the actual picture part. You know, if the hole is too deep, it would be so much better if you stand on my shoulders than me just reaching out a hand to you, you know. So that's where,
good.
Like, I need you to be in the hole with me. that way you could help me process this. But when I get out, we can get out together instead of you just trying to push me along. You know,
that's
like,
good.
Like, let's be in this together. Stand on my shoulders. I'll help you get out. And then you reach down your hand to me and pull me out.
Right.
So that's the thing I feel like it should be. I don't really know. I'm going to be completely honest. And
it's different for everybody.
I'm not going to give you the runaround and give you a timetable because there's no timetable on grief.
There's no timetable.
There's no timetable at all. It's, you need to know that person so well that you see that.
What do they need?
What do they need? You are able to ask them, what do you need? How can I be here for you? And if they give you an answer and says nothing, then that doesn't mean just go away. That means, okay, let's just sit here. Let's watch a movie. Okay. Great example. Wedding Crashers.
Okay.
Okay. Wedding Crashers. Owen Wilson lost both of his parents. Uh-huh. And Vince Vaughn, every year on his birthday, goes and he spends the night at his house. They're grown men with jobs, very successful jobs. But every year he goes and spends the night at Owen Wilson's house, or in the, as the character in the movie, mm-hmm. on his birthday. Mm-hmm. Brings a sleeping bag. They eat. They watch a movie. They do everything. Mm-hmm. So it's even that fact where I'm still going to be here for you.
I acknowledge that today is a hard day for you.
Yeah, I acknowledge it. I'm here for you. You don't even got to say a word, brother. I'm here. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. And every year, like Father's Day is a very hard day for me because I don't have a father to celebrate on Father's Day. Mm-hmm. But my wife, Gavin, is so good in the fact where she asks me, not into the point where it's annoying, like I've already given you an answer, stop asking me, but she's like, how are you doing today? Are you okay? And I'm like, I'm okay. She's like, okay. That's it.
And
are you sure? Just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's in the afternoon and you see them, you know, hit the slump and then it's, you don't get mad at them for it. You don't go, well, you were fine earlier today.
Yeah,
no, it's just like something triggered me right now, or something, you know, the sun came down. A lot of times when the sun goes down, all of us, yeah, and there's right. And so, you know, so I think that what we're trying to say is regardless of what it is that somebody's going through, it's not a problem to be fixed. It's a mystery to be honored. Right. And that is something that, that she says in that book, that it's okay that you're not okay, because it's, you know, to mourn with those who mourn is biblical.
Yeah.
And it's something that we don't do well, but we need to figure it out. And how do you know to get in the pit with somebody or to prod them along? You know them. You know them well enough. You know them enough to know, is this person just stuck? Like they're not part of the unslumping message, the UNSL. The reason why that's an acronym is because I was stuck.
Yeah.
I was completely slumped. I was not trying to get out of that hole. I built myself I was camped out, right? And we have to recognize real quickly that you're not more holy to not hurt.
Too blessed to be stressed is not true.
It's not true.
Not true.
Jesus was known as a man of sorrows. If you look at the emotions, and there was a study done of looking at his emotions while he was here on earth biblically, like looking at scripture, that the emotion that he was in more than any other emotion was sorrow.
Yeah.
He cried with people. He knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, but he took the time to stop and weep with his sister. It's the shortest scripture in the Bible, and that is Jesus wept. That is a complete sentence.
And Jesus, real men don't cry? Okay.
Jesus wept, and he knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, but he still took the time to stop and weep with them. Why? Because he goes into the pit with us. He is there with us in it. He left the splendors of heaven to come to the earth so that he could feel what we feel, endure what we endure, walk through what we walk through, so that he could be a comfort in our time of need, right? And that's what scripture says. And so we don't need to be afraid of emotions. We don't need to be afraid of our these feelings that come up in us. We do not need to be afraid to tell God about what we feel, and we shouldn't feel bad to feel it to another person. I shouldn't feel bad to have to say to you that this is where I'm at today.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you're going to want to try to fix that. Like, hey, and that's okay. That's valid. You might say to me, Mom, you look sad today. Like, you walked in today and you could tell that I had something on my mind. Mm-hmm. And Cole asked me, are you okay? And I had the opportunity right there to know, because he is a safe place for me, that I could have said yes or I could have said no, and he would have dealt with it equally.
Right.
I know that if I'm feeling sad, sometimes I do need somebody to come along and say, hey, you've been in the house for 5 days and you have not even showered. It's time. We're going to dinner or we're going to lunch. Yeah. And sometimes that is what I need. But the thing is that you know what I need because you're willing to ask. You're willing to say, hey, here's our options today. We can go to the beach and walk on the beach. We can go out to lunch and get you out of the house. Or I could stay in the house with you. We could draw the shades, sit in the dark room, and watch movies. That's fine, too. And so what do you do? How do you know how to get them out, or how do you know how to be with them? Just be with them in it.
So you know them.
So that you know whether or not you're supposed to be prodding them out.
Right.
Or whether you're supposed to be sitting them in there with it. Right. And so I think more than anything, what we're saying is it's time for us to change this idea of what grief is. It's not something to be afraid of. It's not something to run from. It is not something that we have to make people come out of their brokenness. It really all comes down to trust, Cole.
Yeah.
And that's what we do so poorly, is trust God that he has a process.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I have to trust that even when you're not listening to me, when I'm saying to you, it's going to get better, I have to trust that God is speaking to you.
Yeah.
I have to trust that God is going to find a way to get to you. Mm-hmm. I have to trust that God is going to find a guy behind you in line that's going to say to you, hey, I love your tattoo, but I know a man named Jesus who's even better than Juice World. Like, I have to trust that God knows how to get a hold of you.
He chased me down, you know.
Who did?
Jesus. He chased me down. You know, he loves you so much that he's just not going to let you be, you know. He will give you every opportunity to come to him, and if you don't, he's going to come chase you down. It's literally like the shepherd in the 99, he leaves the 99 to find the one. But yeah. I look at it as like in our daily lives now, how we could look at it,
yeah,
is if my dog goes a little bit too close to the street, I'm going to yell his name and try to bring him back.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't come, I'm going to go get him out of the hands of danger, and so he doesn't run in the street.
Yeah.
So I look at it as that way, as he completely chased me down. He fought. He climbed every hill and lit up every shadow in my life until he had me. Not because he, like, was this possessive dictator or everything. It's because he loved me. He didn't want me to get hurt. You know, he stopped so many things in my life right before they were about to turn way worse than they already were. Mm-hmm. And he turned it around and used it for his glory and for my good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God to us is a father. He is a friend. And that sometimes is the only person you can turn to.
Mm-hmm.
But how great and how blessed are we to have somebody that loves us that much,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, to some people, father is a word that is not a positive word. It's sometimes your father on this earth is someone who does nothing but points out the wrong that you do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what I knew of father, my dad died when I was 14. My dad was very critical. My dad was the dad that if you hit a home run, he would say, hey, nice hit, but next time round, second differently. My dad threw a butt in with every compliment. There was always something more that I could do, and that was his way of always trying to make me better. At the time, though, I didn't see that as my dad just wants to make me better. I just saw that as my best isn't good enough, no matter what I do. And so my dad was a man that was very hard to please. And as a result of that, the message that it sent to me was that I'm just not good enough, that I am not worthy of just 100% love and approval, regardless of whether or not I succeed. And so for you to say that he is your father, for some, that means, okay, so God's like my earthly father. That's not a good thing.
The answer is no.
But the answer is no to that. And so the goal that we, the, what we need to aspire to do is, if that is a negative connotation and that brings up negative feelings on the inside of me, then I need to learn who God is as a father according to the word. Not according to my earthly father, but according to the word, he is a patient God. He is a good God. That all good things come down from the Father of heavenly lights. That's what James says, that all good things come from him. So I need to tweak my idea of who God is. And so, Cole, what would you say to a mother or a father or a caregiver? What not to do if your child is going through a hard time, going through grief, going through loss, going through pain right now, what should they not do?
Do not compare your life to theirs. Do not compare your trauma or your struggles to what they are going through. You have to validate their feelings, but tell them that you are proud of them, because those words were something that I held on to every time my dad opened his mouth, was, I'm proud of you. I was longing for those words for so long. And I finally, now I look forward to them from my mom and my wife and my mother-in-law and people around me. I look forward to those words. So validate their feelings. Do not try to compare your life, how hard it was and how you got through your stuff. No one cares about that.
Not right now. You don't care in the moment.
Not saying no one cares ever. No, the kid doesn't care in the moment. All he wants to do is hear that you love him. You're proud of him. Whatever he needs, you got it. And he's not alone. Mm-hmm. That he is there. You are validating his feelings. You are validating his emotions.
His experience.
Yeah. Whatever he is going through. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to hear that it's going to be okay, but he wants to be shown that it will be okay through actions.
Meaning that if it's not okay soon, I don't have to walk it alone.
No. I have people in my corner that I can run to, that I can look for support. You know, when I can't mm-hmm. stand, mm-hmm. I know these people behind me will hold me up.
Well, speak to this, if you would. You said, tell me you're proud of me. Cole, what if what you're going through right now is pain because you've done something stupid and you've invited turmoil into your life by something that I'm not proud of that you've done? Let's say, you know, you had a drug problem at one point, right? Like you were running to alcohol and to drugs. At one point in your life because you were trying to escape pain.
Yeah.
If I were to come to you in your pain, I couldn't say to you that I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
What would I have to do? What would Daddy and I always do? We would call you up higher. And calling somebody up higher is speaking to who they are, not what they've done, right? There's a difference between guilt and shame. Guilt says that I've done something wrong.
Shame says you are wrong. Yeah.
Like because of what you've done. Yeah. And the way that we would call you up higher when you were struggling and in pain, and you were in pain because it was something that you did to bring on yourself, walking into that room and reminding you of how you screwed up doesn't help.
Not at all.
Walking into that room and calling you up higher means to speak to the person that we believe that you are, not to speak to what you did. So we would walk into that room and we would say, Cole, you're better than this, is what Daddy would say. And you know that, son.
You know better.
We love you. we love you. You, this is not who you are. What you just did is not who you are. And you, because remember, all behavior is rooted in belief. So if you believe yourself to be a piece of garbage, you're going to act as a piece of garbage. And so the way that we would speak to that and speak to your pain was, you did screw up and now you're in pain. So we would speak to your pain. We would speak to the pain that you're feeling, because we still feel bad that you're in pain. And then we would speak to who you are, not what you did. So
you could still be proud of that person, not of their actions, but proud of the person who they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how God is with us. He loves us. He just doesn't love our sin.
Love the person, hate the sin.
Right.
That's the number one thing I'm still looking for this year.
So what we're supposed to not do is walk in the room and remind you of how you've screwed up, is to try to rush you past your grief, mm-hmm. and to say, it's going to be better, it's going to be fine. I had these too, and you know, you're going to be fine. You want us to validate, to acknowledge pain, to acknowledge our experience, to remind you that you're not alone, mm-hmm. and to speak to who you are, not what happened.
Right.
And then we just have to trust God with you, right? Yeah. I have to trust God with you. As much as I love you, mm-hmm. I have to remember that God loves you even more than me. Mm-hmm. And that is so hard to even imagine, that anyone can love you more than me. Mm-hmm. God loves you more than me.
Yeah.
And so I have to trust that God has got you. And when I walk in that room and I'm trying to fix it for you, it's because I'm hurting. Mm-hmm. And rather than trying to fix it, I just need to hurt with you.
Yeah.
I just need to let you know that you're not alone. Yeah. And so that is everything. Grief is not something that we fix. Grief is something that it's a mystery that we embrace, and we go, you know what? We're hurting because we loved well.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do for one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's so much more to talk about. There are so many questions, that you've written in and that you've asked us about. Questions like, why does God do this? Why does God take people so young? Why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Some of those are really, really deep questions. We may do another podcast where we actually jump back into some of those, but we're definitely going to go over to the YouTube channel, and we are going to do an entire teaching from a minister's perspective, not from a therapist's perspective. I'm not a therapist. We're going to tackle those from a biblical perspective. But today we just wanted to share with you, how is it that we can support one another? And so I pray that you would settle down right into wherever it is that you are today, wherever you are in this hour, because sometimes when you're in grief and you're hurting, you can change hourly, right? And so I want you just to allow whatever it is that's going on inside of you to come. And remember that these emotions, they are waves. And it is our job only to surf those waves, right? It's only our job to just surf them as they come and ride them as they come. Yep. They will come and they will go. And not only do we do that to ourselves and for ourselves, but we do that for our loved ones. Just ride the wave with your loved ones. Be there with them in it and let them know that they're not alone. And that is how we recover. That is how God does the process of healing. And the only way that we really go into suffering is when we're denying our pain.
Yeah.
Right? Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. Mm-hmm. And so we have to know that in this life, there will be pain. In this life, there will be pain. Suffering comes when we say, no, I'm not in pain, and we try to repress it and we try to push it aside. It will come back. And so we just deal with it as it comes, and we help one another through it as it comes. And as a result of it, we're better for it. And
there will be joy in the morning.
There will be joy in the morning. Remember, HOPE, the acronym for HOPE is hold on, pain ends. And it really, really does. It really does end. It may not end right now. It may not end in the next hour or the next day or the next month. But eventually it gets better. And the way that it gets better is to acknowledge it and to put the right support system around you who knows also how to ride those waves with you. We love you. We care about you. Whatever it is that you have need of, please make sure that you go follow us on wherever podcasts are found and the YouTube channel and get your put that little bell on so that you'll know when we post something.
Yep.
And find us on our socials.
Yep. We love y'all, and we hope you have a great rest of your week. As my daddy always said, may the rest of your week be the best of your week.
We'll talk to you later.
Later.